Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Conversations with Dr. Cowan and Friends. And I have a new friend with me today. Her name is Michelle Ford, and please call me Tom, not Dr. Cowan. And we're going to be talking about something I don't talk about very much, but which is, I guess you would call it politics or government or something like that. And let me just, in some ways, maybe I don't know that much about it, but it's also something I must say I've been interested in for years, like decades. And just to give you an example, I had done enough of my own research. Now we're talking 38 years ago, because that's my oldest child, that I did not sign her up for Social Security. And the reason I didn't is because I didn't want us to be in the quote governmental system as much as possible. And I was told this, I think is true. It may not be, but I think it is, that the whole Social Security system is voluntary. In other words, you can choose to sign up or not. Obviously, if you don't sign up, you never get benefits, but you never have to pay into it. And all the things that happen around Social Security don't happen to you because you're not part of the system. Now, so all three of my children were not signed up. Now, as time went on, they eventually did sign up, you know, because they, whatever reasons. But I was aware enough about the problems that was a choice I made now almost four decades ago. I could go into the whole, I ended up, Social Security, I think, is a very interesting thing to actually dissect, because I think it was maybe the first time, maybe not the first time, but a time when the government actually numbered the people. So you, and while that may not seem significant, it's a change in consciousness. In other words, now you're not Tom or Michelle, you are 286347. And so from then on, and people essentially got used to being numbered. And that was, I don't know if it's the first time, but it was a turning point in consciousness. The other thing I discovered about Social Security was that and you can do the math yourself, but the average worker pays in about, with inflation and interest, about $900,000 into the Social Security fund over their lifetime. And they get about $280,000 back, which is an interesting math equation. Because if somebody asked you, are you willing to put in $900,000 because if you put in $10 40 years ago, it's not $10 today, obviously. And the question I always had was, where does that other money go? Like, there's 900 minus, let's say, 300,000. That's millions of people. Who gets the other 600,000? Turns out it's basically the banks. They get the money because they charge interest. But anyways, that's a whole other subject. So anyways, I just want you to know you're not completely talking to a ignoramus about that there's a problem. So with that slightly long-winded introduction, or maybe way long, introduce yourself to us. And let's, once you do that, start with the question, why do we need a new government, or why do we need a change in the current government? I mean, I can think of a million reasons, but I'd love to hear your take on that. So tell us who you are, how you got into this, what you're doing, and then what do we need a change for?
Okay, gosh. And first of all, I'm saluting you, Tom, because talk about an early adopter. You know, you didn't want to give your daughter get her into the Social Security paradigm. And little did you know, you helped her to dodge a proverbial bullet. So thank you for doing that for her. I hope that she realizes how blessed and lucky she is to have a dad who has, at least some skepticism about what's going on here.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, eventually they all got Social Security cards, but not from me.
Right, right. You didn't sell them off into the system. It was voluntary on their part, right? Which is what I'm seeing right now with everyone that's getting into this real ID situation. Yeah, but that's right. A whole other story. So who I am, I'm Michelle Ford. I've been a health freedom activist and advocate since 2012. And I got involved in 2012. Because I was one of these people that was a closet, you know, anti-vaxxer, right? We hear this term every day in the media. And I didn't particularly feel that way. I didn't want to belong to a particular group of, you know, especially something that had such a negative connotation. But my oldest daughter was injured by her vaccines as an infant. Yeah. And so I found myself being labeled as something when my child was a victim. And so it felt really weird to be vilified.
And in other words, you had a personal experience that this isn't what it's cracked up to be. And that's putting it mildly.
Oh, yeah. In fact, you know, I was so young when I had my oldest daughter. She's 28 now, and I was 22 when I had her.
Yeah, you're only about 29, right? Or so.
Yeah, I like to think so. Anyway, I've got so much work to do to help save this country that I feel like, I feel like I'm 25. But I was so young when I had her that I didn't have the emotional fortitude to go toe-to-toe with a doctor or to question the authority or any of that. So I blindly, you know, when her pediatrician explained what was happening and that she was being harmed by her vaccines, my immediate response, I really want you to get the cognitive dissonance, how deeply entrenched into the system I was, so trusting. My response to the pediatrician was, well, what are we going to do? I mean, she has to get all of her vaccines. I was a strong proponent that she gets all of her vaccines. So the fact of the matter is she did get all of them.
Well, however, so your doctor said that she was injured by a vaccine, because that's unusual.
I know that now. I didn't know that back then.
Yeah.
She said, you know, it's her vaccines. She's reacting. Then she had me, she's like, if it happens again after her next visit, then I'll know for sure that's what it is. So she had the classic symptoms, you know, the high fever, very high fever, the explosive mustard colored, you know, yellow diarrhea, the arching of the back, the screaming like some sort of a primate. I mean, when I think about it, I can't believe that I was still pushing for her to get vaccinated. However, it did happen again the following month, and the doctor was like, yeah, okay, that's what it is. And I was like, well, what are we going to do? I mean, she has to be able to go to school when it's time for kindergarten. What are we going to do? You know, I want to make sure she gets all of them. And the doctor was like, okay, all right, listen, here's what we'll do. Okay. She'll get all of them so that you're happy. Okay. But we won't do it according to the schedule. CDC schedule. We'll do it more slowly. And actually, I credit her pediatrician with saving her life, because I was very like, I'm not going to miss an appointment. We practically lived at the doctor's office. We were there all the time with earaches and bronchitis and antibiotics. Yeah. And the whole thing. You probably know exactly what I'm talking about.
I do. Yes.
And now when I look back, knowing what I know, I'm mortified that it took me allowing harm to my own child. And not even that, like it's even worse than that. I mean, I feel like such a horrible, horrible human being when I think about it. But I got divorced, and then I wanted to get remarried and wanted to have more children in my early 30s. And it was at that moment when we were talking about, you know, starting a family. And I was like, gosh, you know, I probably should look into vaccines, because I don't want to go through the same thing that happened with my daughter. Right. And so that's when I started my research. And that was in 2004. It was like the end of 04 and kind of bleeding into 05. And what did I do? Like a great little student, you know, I went to the internet, which was, you know, pretty young at that time in 2004 or five. And I Googled, you know, I think back then it was Jeeves or something. I Googled, you know, are vaccines harmful or something like that. And of course, the first website that popped up was the CDC. So I was like, oh, great. The CDC, of course, you know, it's all going to be right here. So I click on the CDC website. And it was like, I went into, you know, those movies, like you, there's a scene where like the hallway gets longer.
Yeah.
That I had that moment. And it was because the whole landing page felt like one giant vaccine ad, safe and effective vaccines, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like everything was safe and effective. And then I started digging, and right there on the main page, death was listed as one of the side effects.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa. And I, you know, my now ex-husband, I was like, you've got to see this. Did you know that vaccines can kill? Wow. Wow. I mean, it was like mind blown. And that's when it started for me. So I started reading everything I could get my hands on and attending lectures and reading articles and always still going back to the CDC website. I mean, it took so long for me to lose trust.
Yeah.
I kept giving them the benefit of the doubt, like for years. Then when they were coming after my rights, you know, because by 2012, when I got politically active, you know, that was like 7-8 years of just being like quiet and just doing all the digging and reading and learning. And
in those first 7-8 years, your only issue really was the vaccine stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. In fact, I'm one of these people, like someone pointed out, you know, the exhaust in the sky. And I was like, oh, that's ridiculous. They would never let any harmful things come down from the sky. You know, I was not skeptical of pesticide. I was not skeptical of GMOs. I was not skeptical of electromagnetic frequencies. I was not skeptical of amalgam fillings. Like, I really want you to get, I was that mainstream, totally indoctrinated, good student, you know, good order follower, kind of a person, right? And I say person.
What did you do for work?
So I was in the insurance business. Yeah. It's sales, you know, essentially. Yeah.
Okay.
So, and I had no reason to be skeptical because frankly, life was comfortable.
Yeah.
Life was comfortable. I had no issues. I had no issues with the law. I had no issues, you know, with anything. I was great at paying my bills on time, paying my taxes on time, the whole thing, right? I related to them like they were mine. So long story short, because I could really go down that whole vaccine rabbit hole forever. The picture that I would really like to paint is since 2012, I've done it all. Okay. I've done letter writing campaigns. I've done petitions. I've done door knocking. I've done community education seminars. I've done rallying at the CDC and in Washington, DC. I did an event at the press club. I've done a concert in a park. I did I've participated on a referendum. I've done recall stuff. I've been a campaign manager for a political candidate. I've been volunteering on political campaigns. I even started a nonprofit, the Vaccine Injury Awareness League, in 2015. Exhausting work, which by the way, is one of the primary reasons I lost my husband, is because he was like, I want my wife back. Like, what happened to you? You know,
yeah.
I want that sleeper. I want that woman who is like, dinner's on the table at 6 and every holiday has the house decorated. And, you know, it's a different lifestyle when you're totally indoctrinated. So anyway, I lost my husband. And, but the one thing that he could always say is he saw me doing my homework. He saw me reading, studying, doing it all. So he's very, thankfully, he's not one of these husbands or ex-husbands that is fighting me, because he saw me doing the work, which is, you know, the work got me divorced. But anyway, long story short, I came to the solution by exhausting all of the solutions I were told were the solutions.
Yeah.
So this is not an overnight fly-by-night thing, okay? In 2015,
In other words, let me just clarify. So in other words, you were sort of thinking or told the solution of the problem is to write letters to your congressman and then they'll change and they'll make vaccines safe or get rid of them or no mandates. And what you find is they write you back saying, thank you very much. See you later.
Too or bad, they don't so write sad. It. Sorry.
And, right. Or that. So, okay. That's not, we're going to have a concert and raise some money and da, da, da. Mm-hmm. And then nothing happens.
Right. Nothing happens. Yeah. And not only that, but then it was like, oh, well, here's what you're doing wrong. You need to join your assembly district and get involved in the, in your assembly. You know, you've got to join your Republican Party, join your Democrat Party, get involved locally with the party because the party is going to help.
Right.
Like, oh, great. That's what I'll do. So get myself involved as one of the voting members of the local assembly district with my Republican Party, you know, because the Republicans are the ones that are for smaller government and they're going to help fight for our freedoms and they're constitutionally minded. Okay, great. That's what I'm going to do. I'm finding my people. And I'll be honest with you. I was actually really impressed with the hard work that was done locally by the local Republicans. I'm not going to lie. They were very, very, the individual men and women that were there were committed. So I'm not poo-pooing any of the work that they tried to do. And you know what? They were for smaller government and they were for constitutional literacy and they were for all of these things. However, what they didn't know, and they still don't know because I haven't had them on any of my classes, is that they're doing it wrong.
Got it.
Why? Because there really is a hierarchy of things. There really is a natural order of things. There are things that are unarguably the way things are, okay? One of which is like gravity. You know, you can call it something else, but if you take an object and you go like this, it's gonna fall. It's just the way things are, okay? So I had to, after all of my digging and researching and trying to figure out the ultimate solution,
the ultimate solution to what?
Well, I don't know if you noticed. I have a feeling you did, so I'm being a little sarcastic, but really for your audience, have you noticed that like, everything feels upside down.
Yeah.
Wrong is right. Suddenly, morals are out the window. If you use the improper pronoun, you're labeled as a racist or a homophobe or a xenophobe or a name your phobia. Okay.
Yeah.
There has been so much marginalization. Social media has been a tool to divide and conquer people. So has regular media. Frankly, so has entertainment and music. And if you don't fit into the perfect box, listen, if you don't identify as having 16 genders, if you don't identify as being multiple colors, if you don't identify as being victimized in some way by the white man, by the whoever, fill in the blank, if you're not a victim, you're not one of them. You don't belong here if you're not a victim, right? And listen, that's not to say that I haven't been victimized or felt like a victim to this broken system, because I have felt that way.
Yeah.
However, the entire time, I've been like waiting for the second coming of Christ, both literally and figuratively, because I'm like, is it gonna get any worse? I mean, really? What on earth is going on here? And why is it that I went through school? You know, I'm a product of public school. A lot of people are, not everybody, but a lot of people are. And when I was learning about our country and our founding fathers and our constitution and yada, 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 and how it's supposed to work, I left, you know, I graduated high school and college. Well, I didn't finish college. I graduated high school and I attended college for 2 years. And I was 100% sure that we had a unique form of government that was unlike any government in the world. I was certain this was a government of we the people. I was certain that my vote mattered. I was certain, 100% certain, that with just enough manpower and enough stick-to-itiveness and enough rallying the troops that I could affect change because I'm an American and because, right? However, in 2015, this is when we were fighting this horrible bill in California called SB 277.
Yeah.
I had just founded the Vaccine Injury Awareness League.
That was the vaccine mandate bill.
Yes, it sure was. And let me tell you, we did everything right back then too. Door knocking, phone calling, rallying the troops, getting everybody activated. I think we had close to 1700 people show up to the Capitol. And by the way, it wasn't just me. I mean, I found amazing, connections with people because everyone had the same concern. It was so magnetic. It was like, wow, we had almost 1700 people show up to the Capitol. And the sheriff at the Capitol was blown away. Like, wow, they had never seen so many people show up for one issue.
Yeah.
But my senator at the time, Holly Mitchell, she's now one of the county board of supervisors. And for the record, I did not vote for her. She said two things that were very, very interesting and set me in on a trajectory that brought me to where I am today. Okay. So I actually credit her. I gotta give it to her for that slip of the tongue, I think. I don't think she intended to do what it ended up causing. However, that's what happened. So she said two things. One of the things that she said is, you guys are just people. I'm like, what?
Opposed to frogs or?
I'm like, hold on a minute. Isn't this a government of we the people? I'm like, that was so, like, I had a moment of like, what is she talking about? What else? As opposed to what? Like the 26 people or whatever it is, I'd have to go back and look at the number of people that were in support of the bill. It's a tiny number. I mean, that day I was certain we were going to see victory and we were going to kill the bill because it was so lopsided. Nobody wanted this bill to go through.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like for everyone that wanted it, there was like 100 that that didn't want it. And growing up believing that we're we the people, I thought for sure it was dead on arrival, right?
Right.
No, that's not what happened. So you're just people. It was like, wow. The other thing that she said was, and this is what set me off into a whole other realm. She said, you don't own your kids. There were so many issues I had with that sentence. Cause I'm like, own? Of course we don't own our kids. I mean, they're not property. That's like the craziest thing I've ever heard. Of course we don't own our kids, but we are accountable. We are responsible. It's really up to us. I mean, I was there. I birthed my children. It's my name on their documents. Like, I don't understand what you're saying right now. It was very troubling for me. But the conclusion that I came to was,
did she say this to you or she said it to a group?
She said it to the group.
Yeah.
And I immediately, like, once I went through the, kind of parsing out, because it was a very brief sentence, right? You don't own your kids. That's five words. Once I went through the whole, like, well, but wait a minute. Okay. They're not property, but I'm responsible, but I don't own them. But wait a minute. That whole thing that happened in my brain, I came to the conclusion that she knew something that I don't know. So that's what did it for me. I'm like, what does she know that I don't know?
Yeah, that's a great question. What is
so
she?
I'm going to find out what it is. And I'm not going to ask her. I'm just going to go on the hunt. So it started with, where's the Constitution? Where is it? And I don't mean like, I don't mean like, where is it? Because I have it. I mean, where is it in real life? Why is it that these people who are supposed to be our representative government, why is it that they can just do that and ignore all of these voices. How can they do that? It made no sense given my education.
Yeah.
Okay. Given my indoctrination, it made no sense to me. So that's, I went on the hunt. So I started looking online for patriotic groups that were constitutionally minded, and I found some incredible people. Okay. Sheriff Mack and Chris Van Hall and the National Liberty Alliance. And I mean, there were so many out there that are doing really good work trying to get men and women to learn about the Constitution. Okay. And it really is like, it's got to come from within you, because let me tell you, reading the Constitution and digesting the simplicity, it's like reading the Bible. Sometimes you need to read it and bounce stuff off, you know, bounce these ideas off of somebody else in your world and parse it out and like read the Federalist Papers and really start putting your mindset back to 1776 when they were trying to escape tyranny, because I feel like that's where we are right now. But I, mind you, this was in, I started this journey in 2015 and, you know, 2016, that was, I was just barely getting my sea legs on. And I thought my goal was to like memorize, you know, I was going to need to memorize the Constitution. And then if I memorized it, maybe I would learn how to have rights again. No, I mean, by the way, that is important. Everyone listening to this message, you need to go get yourself your own law library.
Yeah.
Okay. This is your law library. And it's both. It's the Declaration of Independence and it's the Constitution. Okay. The Declaration of Independence is for mankind, right? That's for us. The Constitution is the contract between the people and the vendors we know of as our government contractors, the people that we hire to do governing for us.
Yeah.
But we gave them enumerated powers. We gave them very specific authority. However, what we didn't know was going to happen is that they were going to create different classifications for mankind. So I'm going to go back to that natural order of things, you know, like gravity that we were talking about a minute ago. It's like, so there is God, the creator of all things. So for the atheists on the call, you might as well just hang up now, because if I just lost you, none of the rest is even going to, you don't even have to hear it. And it's fine. I don't want you on my team. No offense. I don't mean any offense, but really the rest is not even going to be for you. You're not going to get it. So you can disconnect. However, for those of you that understand or comprehend that it's so much bigger than us, there's so much bigger. The supreme divine intelligence is so much bigger than just us. But it starts there. Okay. So stick with me, because it's very specific. So there's God, the creator, and then God created mankind. Okay. You with me so far?
Yep.
Great. So God created us and we live on this terrain we know as, you know, we've labeled it Earth, let's say. Okay, this is Earth. And we don't live full time in the water. We're not, you know, we don't have gills. We don't, you know, we're not foraging at the bottom of the ocean. Okay, we're not sea creatures. Well, some people are. we'll leave the politics out of it, Richard Pan. But anyway. So some people serve a different master. I hope that came through. Okay. But we don't live in underneath the ocean, and we don't, you know, I'm not living up in the atmosphere, you know, flying around. My feet are firmly planted on this terrain, on the land. And that is very important to know first and foremost, because without realizing your domain, your jurisdiction, it can get a little heady, you know what I mean? But very simplistically, God created mankind and our jurisdiction is on the land, okay? But then mankind, being as corrupted and sinful as we are, we do really stupid things. Number one, divide and conquer. So we created religions. My God is better than your God. My practices are better than your practices. You know, and then that created a lot of dysfunction. So then we also have other divide and conquer, right? That happens. It wasn't just religion. You know, there's, you can think of 10 million other divide and conquer techniques that have happened. So just know when I say religion, I'm also talking about how we do this thing about putting each other into boxes. Okay. But religions created governments. So right there, you see a problem, right? The governments created this fiction called corporation, right? You might be able to find a corporate headquarters, but can you knock on a corporation and talk to a corporation? No, you can't. There are only representatives of corporations, you know, pieces of paper, like, you know.
What time frame are you talking about that governments created corporations?
I actually don't remember what century, but I want to say it was like either the early 1900s or early 1800s, but don't quote me. I suck at numbers. Okay.
I mean, there were British, you know, East India Corporation goes way back. So it's right. Been hundreds of years.
It's been a long time. Okay. Yeah. But keep in mind that there is no man or woman that's a corporation that you can go knock on the door and have a conversation with and say, you know, yeah. I got a problem with you. No, all they have are representatives of their corporation, right? But there's no actual being.
Right. It's a made up entity.
It's a total complete fiction, but it exists. We see, you know, I just pulled up my Wells Fargo bill, right? So I know that corporations exist. But there isn't like one man or one woman that you can go talk to that is that thing. There's only the titles of them, like the president or the treasurer, the secretary, the whatever, you know, and all of these people have these titles and they're just representatives of this fiction. So let's keep going. So you're with me so far on that?
Yep.
Okay, great. So corporations created this thing called citizens. So a fictional entity in collusion with this thing we call government, okay, created a thing called citizens.
So in other words, governments didn't create the concept of citizens.
No. The corporations came first.
Got it.
Okay. So we walk around on this terrain that we call the United States, right? So I'm on California. And what state are you on?
New York.
New York. Okay. Wow. So we're like all the way across the country from one another. And we're still on the same land mass, so to speak, right? This country we know of as the United States. Okay. Because we're all connected by, you know, invisible borders, okay?
Yeah.
So there is this thing called the United States Corporation. Now, that might not seem so bad, right? When you go to your local city hall and you want to talk to your mayor or your city council or your board or whatever, right up there behind the mayor's seat, you're going to see the city seal. And unless you live in an unincorporated community, that seal is going to say, you know, Los Angeles Incorporated, and then a year.
Yeah.
Right? It's hidden in plain sight. It's all over the place. But somehow we give a pass to what looks like a government. And we say like, well.
In other words, the city of Los Angeles is itself a corporation.
Correct.
And the mayor is the CEO or president of the corporation.
Actually, the mayor is a useful idiot in every town that's incorporated.
Right. So he's the lackey.
Right. And his job is as valuable, as important as the micro tyrant that stands in front of your favorite supermarket that says you can't come in without a mask.
Right.
Because that's what they're doing. They're there having no authority, doing exactly what they're being told to do by their regional governance. So this, I don't know what you guys have up in New York, but here—
regional governance? What is that?
Let this shock you into the stratosphere. So here where I domicile, where my feet are, we have this thing called the Southern California Association of Governments. So it's very similar to like the Bar Association or my Chamber of Commerce. You know, there are members. So the members of the Southern California Association of Governments are the city councils that pay dues, which is like pretty much all of them. But the local taxpayers in each city are paying, I think it's $100,000 a year premium to be a member of this organization. And then they have these meetings where representatives of each city council, who are elected locally, by the way, they will go to these meetings of the Southern California Association of Governments, which then is now a non-elected body. Okay, notice how representatives from each city go there that are elected for their city, but they go there and then it's a non-elected body of people, right? Yeah. That are paying $100,000 of your taxpayer dollars to get told what they're going to do. So for example, this is probably happening in your community. And if it hasn't happened yet, it's coming soon. They're changing all of the zoning, housing zoning from R1, you know, residential one units, one house, one dwelling, up to four. So they're turning all towns into like up, they're calling it up zoning. Why? For this massive flood of all these people that are, you know, we're overpopulated and we've got to make way for all of these people who need a place to live. And apparently they all want to live in your community, my parents' community, Santa Cruz, San Francisco, San Diego. they're pushing everyone into these urban islands, right? And it's all under this guise of upzoning, and then it's all under the guise of fair housing and, you know, oh, there's all these victims out there that can't find a place to live and they all want to live in your neighborhood, miraculously.
It sounds to me like the most important point so far is that the governing body of even down to a local level is not actually a government of, you know, elected by the people. It's a corporate entity. Yep. That is a subsidiary of a larger corporate entity.
I couldn't have said it better. In a nutshell, that's exactly right. And not only that, but like here on California, we have the Franchise Tax Board.
Yeah.
I mean, it's right there in the word. It's right there in the title. They're a franchise of the federal tax collection agencies. And they've also weaponized each employer to be tax collectors too. And not only that, but they've weaponized employers to be micro tyrants for the pharmaceutical mafia. So like, you know,
so the state of California is itself a separate corporation.
Correct.
And they collect taxes on the basis of a corporation levying a fee on the people who live in their jurisdiction.
Correct.
And they're a franchise, like McDonald's is a franchise of a larger corporate entity, which is, what's the name of that?
So the largest corporation is the United States.
Yeah. It's not, right, which is different.
And then there's also the States of America, which is where we get our state of, and then fill in the blank, state of California, state of New York, city of Los Angeles. Anytime you see a state of or a city of, right, there's this state of state thing going on, which is the underling, right?
Yeah.
When really there's just California or there's just New York. So you can differentiate the, you can tell the difference between state of fill in the blank versus this landmass we know as California.
So the landmass is what's the real California.
Correct.
The governing body is a corporation of California.
Correct. And keep in mind, there's this beautiful thing that was decided long, long ago that the Constitution is the supreme law of the...
Yeah, land.
Yes.
So a citizen... So I think you're getting to the point of we could... So yeah, I'm probably jumping ahead, but essentially... If you make the real distinction between you are actually a citizen of the land, which is under the jurisdiction of the Constitution, under this, you know, jurisdiction of the higher being, creator, that's who you actually are. That's where you get your rights from.
Amen. And just some minor semantics to fix, but basically you've got the concept 100% correct. Okay. So, because I can hear that, yeah. You know where I'm going with this. So as long as you're a citizen, by definition, you're also several other fictions. You are a person. You are an individual.
You mean a citizen of the corporation.
Right.
Right.
As long as you're a citizen of the corporation, you have several titles. You're an individual, you're a person, you're a resident, et cetera. Okay. There's several other things that you can be, but if you look at the laws, measures, codes, statutes, executive orders, emergency orders, fill in the blank. Okay. All of those relate to citizens, persons, individuals, residents.
What is it called if you're a, I don't know what the word is, citizen of the land of the United States and or I don't know if it's even the United States, of the Constitution or the American, whatever. I don't know what the word is.
Okay, so the, what I'm advocating for, right, is for people to be men and women on the land, sons and daughters, mothers and fathers, on the land.
Yeah.
And the land jurisdiction is called the, with a lowercase t, the United with a lower U, because we're not, the capital U, believe it or not, is how the corporation is filed. Okay. So we just happen to be united because we're stuck together. Okay.
Right.
United States of America. Which is totally distinct and separate from the United with a capital U states.
Right. That's the corporation.
Right. So what'll start to happen now is you're going to start seeing when next time you read news articles or whatever, you'll see it right there. The United States, fill in the blank. They're doing this. They're doing that. They're doing whatever to citizens. They do like to mess up the parlance quite a bit. I mean, every time a politician is on a podium saying, my fellow Americans, I'm like, ah! What a fraud. Like, they're lying to the people, just like, unfortunately, our teachers accidentally taught us, because they were accidentally taught that we were Americans. No, we weren't, actually. We were misclassified on paper as citizens of the, and it's of the corporation. And it happens when your birth certificate gets registered at your county registrar's office, where all property is registered.
So then that's the moment you become a patron of the corporation.
Yes. Yep.
And if you didn't do that, you would be not subject to any of the orders or edicts or whatever laws that are passed by this this corporate board, which presumably includes the House and the Senate and the presidents and all the rest
it
of
does.
Them. They are like governing entities of the, they're like corporate board members.
Yes. That's exactly right.
You're only subject to being a member of the corporation if you agree to be a member of the corporation.
Well, and that's where it comes into play, because almost all of us for the last 160 years, at least ever since the 14th Amendment, right? We've been part of this program not knowing. So there's been a deception going on. However, we have the right to status correct. It's like once you know that there's a whole other system for free people,
yeah,
you are allowed to choose freedom, and they can't stop you from choosing that freedom. However, it's not one and done, right? Because we've spent our whole lives getting into contracts that we didn't know were subjecting us to different jurisdictions.
Yes.
Right? I showed you my Wells Fargo bill. I've got a corporate contract with Wells Fargo because I have a credit card with them.
Yeah.
Right? I got into that contract when I was a citizen. And I'm no longer a citizen. I'm an American woman on California.
So how does one, just partly for time here, so how do you do this status? So the status correction means you understand what you're saying, that you no longer wish to be, I don't know what the word is again, a patron of the corporation.
Patron is another fiction. You really just want to be a man.
Yeah. So you want to be
you're a man, I'm a woman.
Human being.
No, that's another corporate fiction.
Got it. So man or woman, who's a free human, a free man or woman under a resident or no.
So you're a man on New York.
On New York. Okay. How do you become a man on New York?
I'm so glad you asked. And I love, by the way, that we just did that. I love that you did that, because that is part of the undoing.
Yeah.
And we don't understand, we comprehend. Yeah. Understand puts you right back under someone else's authority. So remember, we the people, right? Our brilliant, brilliant, brilliant founding documents, the ones that promised us a life of freedom and liberty, very simplistic. However, very, very, like, it seems too good to be true when you go back and read those now. And when you realize that the Constitution wasn't totally for, I mean, it was for us, but if you read it like a corporate contract, it changes things a bit. Okay. When you start reading it, like that's the control mechanism that we have over our government contractors that we hire to govern, right? Because listen, we don't want a bunch of lawlessness. We don't want our roads to fall apart. We don't want, you know, chaos and all this stuff. No, we're not anti-government. You know, we want to be free to be, and we don't want civil war, and we don't want all these crazy things. We want self-governance, but we also want the things that we created that work. Listen.
You want to hire competent managers.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yes. And think of it like that. The problem with the situation right now in the de facto government, the government that we see in fact, but it's not lawful. The problem with them is that they operate as though they are in charge. And technically speaking, for now they are, because we don't quite have enough status corrected Americans on the land on each state. So to answer your question, how does one do it? How does one properly status correct? First, I want you to know, a minute ago I talked about the registrar's office is where all property is registered.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one system, the registration system. Okay. For free people, it's the recorder. Things get recorded. Births, marriages, major property transfers, stuff like that, businesses, whatever. Things get recorded. In a free society, recording is like public notice. We're just letting everybody know this is how it is now, right? Yeah. Whereas in the registration system, first they get your property and then they get to charge you permit fees and registration fees for the rest of your life. Okay. Yeah. You want to breathe? Sorry, it's going to cost you, especially once you're genetically modified, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
So there's the recording, the public notice that happens in the recording system where free people transact, which I think the term transact is a fictional term, but we record. So how do you record where you have your feet on the ground? Okay. So you might want to write this down. You go to TASA, T-A-S-A, which stands for the American States Assembly. So TASA.AmericanStateNationals.org. And there you can find your state coordinator. Because guess what? This is happening on all 50 states. And if I have anything to do with it, which I'd like to say that I do, at least here on Los Angeles and on California, we are actively assembling. And by assemble, I mean we are restoring our de jure republic form of government. And for those of you who immediately went to, I don't want Republicans in charge. I'm not talking about Republicans. I'm talking about republic.
Yeah.
Which is what our country was founded on, which is why everybody and their mother wants to move here, because they think it's still a republic. In the de facto system, it's not. In the de facto system, what we see in fact is that it is a mob rule mentality. We've got to get that 51% of the voters who are registered to vote or whatever. They decide everything for the fate of the other 49%. In common law, which is what this is, common sense, okay? It's not majority rule. It is self-governance. If I don't cause harm, bodily injury or property damage to another man or woman or son or daughter, then there's no crime. So victimless crimes go away. Now, if there is a victim, what if I'm traveling down the street in my automobile and I'm doing this thing that in my former life was known as speeding. Okay. That's a prime example of a fiction. There's no such thing as speeding. Speed limits were manufactured by some,
yeah,
whatever. But if I happen to be speeding, because, you know, no one's around and, you know, I want to go 55 and I'm behaving safely, you know, there are no kids playing in the street and there's no other hazards or something like that, right? I have common sense. I know whether or not I can safely travel more quickly. But if I'm traveling and I happen to be going faster than what this de facto system says I'm allowed to travel, and I get a, you know, police officer that pulls me over and wants to give me a hard time, I'm going to, you know, when you're a common law American, there has to be a victim for a crime to exist. So all of that other victimless stuff goes away like overnight when we have, we don't even need a majority. We just need enough. Enough looks like this: 75 properly status corrected men and women on the land on each county. And actually it's even better than that. We only need two thirds of the counties on each state. So California is a huge state. We have, I think, 58 or 59 counties. We are actively assembling right now, and we have about 26, I think, counties that are currently on the verge of having a major explosion, because people are not only finding out about this, but they're taking immediate action. Status correction also happens when you get married in a funny way. Think about it like this. When you went from single to married, or married to single, it was just paperwork.
Yeah.
You know, the Gestapo didn't show up at your door. The military didn't show up at your door. It wasn't a big scary thing, you know. It's just paperwork. And so I think probably 90% of this is mental. You've got to wrap your brain around the fact that you're not this fictional character. And by the way, how you can tell the difference between your body and this fiction is the fiction comes in all capital letters. Now, when you were in kindergarten and they were teaching you how to write your name, they taught you how to write your name. Your first letter is uppercase and all the rest is lowercase, right? And then you get to your middle name or your last name and same thing. The first letter is uppercase and the rest is lowercase. That's how you can identify you as the living man versus what's on your credit card or your driver's license or all the other ways that your corporate fiction has engaged in corporate contracts.
So let's go back a minute. So the policeman stops you for quote speeding and you have status corrected as a free woman living in the ground of California. On the ground. Sorry.
In his water jurisdiction.
And so what do you say to him?
Well, first I ask him what crime was committed.
And he says you were speeding.
You were speeding. And then I would say, I'm sorry, sir, I don't comprehend that.
And he's, let me just be devil's advocate. And he says, well, I clocked you going 70 in a 55 mile an hour.
That makes no sense to me. I don't comprehend that.
Okay, so then he gives you a ticket anyways. Then what happens?
So you have to autograph that ticket, which means that you agree with them.
Yeah. So you don't sign it.
You don't sign it. Now, if they want to really press the issue and they tell you that you're resisting or they're going to arrest you for, I mean, God only knows, right? It actually happened to a woman on Orange County because the first thing she did was take off her license plates and she got all excited. And of course she got identified almost immediately as not having proper plates. And so she got harassed by this police officer and he literally reached in through her car window, unlocked her car, pulled her out and arrested her. So these things do happen.
Yeah,
where people are being unlawfully searched, seized, you know, their property's being seized. What happened to her is her case got dismissed, but still, who wants to go through that?
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to go through that. I don't want some fictional officer to use his title to abuse anything that I've done if there's no victim. Now, if there's a victim, it's a whole other story. I need to own up and man up and like take responsibility for what I've done. So I predict there's going to be some growing pains as people figure out how to act ethically, honestly, with integrity. Yeah. But ultimately that's the goal. If our politicians were doing that, we wouldn't be in this mess.
Right. Presumably if there's enough people who do that and the system will have to change how they deal with them because they,
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but yes, that's why we're assembling. That's why it's not majority rule. That's why we just need enough. Once we have 2/3 of the counties on each state assembled, then we are at the top of the hierarchy. And so we'll be able to fix everything beneath the hierarchy. We'll be able to help fix the governments that got out of control. We'll be able to-
Essentially, then you become the United States.
It's not really. We're always still the United States of America with the small U. However, we're in charge right now. That spot is vacated. It's like not vacated. It's like inactivated.
Yeah, right.
It's like a volcano that's been sitting there just percolating, waiting, waiting, waiting until you get enough pressure. And then it's like, boom. Yeah. All right. We are back.
All right.
We haven't been in control for 160 years, but we're back now. And they're on notice. They already know we're doing this. In fact, the Continental Marshal is working very closely with the de facto government, not just at the federal level that we know the United States operates at, but also at the state level. So they know we're doing this. They know we're peaceful. They know we're doing it lawfully. And frankly, I think many of them are going, thank you, God. Finally, these people know who they are and they're doing it the right way. And we're not causing a rebellion or an insurrection or a terrorist act or anything like that. That's not our motivation. Our motivation is to restore our lawful de jure government. And we're actually rolling out from August 30th to September 6th. We have like a whole marketing blitz to educate the public at large about the difference between de jure and de facto, because we are on target to have our du jour elections in November.
Got it. All right. So what I'm going to say here, just because I think we're out of time, is I think the purpose of this was to interest people in looking into this further. That's what I think hopefully we've accomplished. They may not know how to do it. They may not know all the details. So if somebody says, yeah, I'm interested, what's their next move?
Okay, so the best thing for them to do is to go to that TASA.AmericanStateNationals.org website, find their county, their state coordinator. They can enter their information.
Can you give that website again?
Oh, sure. It's T like Tom, A S like Sam, A dot AmericanStateNationals.org.
Got it. Okay.
So they can go there, find their state coordinator. They can fill out the contact me form. Okay. Then the state coordinator will route it to the county coordinator for their county, because this is county specific. Yeah. And then the county coordinator will reach out to them. The lag time is approximately, 3 to 5 days for it to go through that little process. Everyone's a volunteer for now. So it might, don't be alarmed if it takes a few days for them to get back to you. And then they will contact you and answer all your questions. And they'll walk you through where to find the paperwork, which there's two ways to do it. And by the way, we can help people that are naturalized. We can help people that are green card holders if they've been here long enough and have a, they're here on good standing, lawfully, not taking public assistance, no criminal histories and stuff like that. So there's processes pretty much for everyone that's here lawfully. And it's just paperwork. And then you meet with a common law notary, which every state has common law notaries. And then they will publish all your paperwork for you in the common law recorder.
And I understand that you do workshops for people to learn more about this. Can you give us a website for that or contact for that?
Yes, actually, the link to my Thursday morning webinar, I do it every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific time. And you could find the link for that on the California Assembly website, because I just happen to be on California. And that website is californiaassembly.com. But don't do www, because we're already starting to experience some tech censorship, which is a bummer. But you have to do https://, and then californiaassembly.com.
Can you say that again? Say that again.
It's https://. californiaassembly.com.
Got it.
And then, the main landing page on the right hand side, there's a section that says events, and you'll see, it's like a scrolling set of events, because once the event happens, it falls off the events page. But if someone goes there on a Thursday before 9 a.m. Pacific, the link will be there. You could just click on it and join my Zoom.
Got it. All right. Very interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you joining me, and I think that a lot of people will be interested in this. And it's fascinating. If there's anything I've learned with this virology stuff, it's that there's a difference between real and make-believe, and it's about time we figure that out.
Amen. Thank you so much.
All right.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day. And you when too. You get the link, I'll share it out among my places. So please feel free to share that link with me. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.